This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome back to Sunday Arts Magazine. We're just about ready to go into an interview with amazing man of Melbourne, Tony Elwood, who is the director of the NGV. We need to apologise. There's a bit of a feedback echo in it, but hey, we're recording from everyone's lounge rooms and it's a bit echoey and he had construction going on next door. So the quality of the audio isn't quite as good as we'd like it to be, but you'll hear his wonderful enthusiasm and what a creative soul he is. So here he is, Tony Elwood from NGV. My next guest, he's so important. He's really important here in Melbourne. And he's somebody that I admire so much, and I am so pleased that we have him running the show at one of the most amazing organisations in our wonderful city of Melbourne. I am talking about Tony Elwood, Director of NGV. Hello.
David, thank you. That's a really beautiful introduction. Hello.
How are you? Hello. Now, over the last, how many years have you been at the NGV?
8 years.
8 years. I really do have to congratulate you because you've just done the most amazing job while you've been there.
Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you. It's a labour of love. I've got an amazing team behind me as well.
But you've taken it to such extremes, some of the exhibitions that you've done. The Jean-Paul Gaultier, for instance, you know, like, whoa, those figures that were used there, you know, like so many amazing shows that are, and you've bought the ball as well, the big gala ball, which is fantastic as well. Obviously a very tough year for you because the Winter Masterpieces didn't happen.
No.
And other exhibitions were cut short. But the really good news is that on December 19th, what is happening?
We're going to open the second instalment of the Triennium, which
Yay!
Is so an exhibition initiated 3 years ago. We've tried to bring a lot of new thinking around, whether it's the gala, the Triennial, or Design Week. There's a whole lot of things that we've been trying to sort of bring in that sort of fresh thinking. And the Triennial was one of the really important projects to us as an organisation because people kept referring to the fact that Sydney has its Biennale and Brisbane has its Asia-Pacific Triennial. What does Melbourne have as a recurring event that shows its commitment? Even though we were doing a lot in the art and design space, contemporary art particularly, this is about, people needed something that was going to sort of recur and come about and be reliable. So we're very lucky that this didn't hit in COVID because it is only the second iteration of a triennial and we really want it to be embedded in the psyche of Melburnians, particularly Victorians, because it's about giving us exposure and opportunity to, you know, some of the world's, and I do mean, you know, the world's best art and design. We've travelled in a previous life extensively. We've seen a lot of things online. We've worked with supporters from all over the globe to come up with over 86 projects, over 100 artists and designers, and just over 30 countries. And, yeah, it's ambitious in its scope. And the great thing about this triennial is it has not been compromised by COVID.
Fantastic. With the first one, as you said, 3 years ago, for obvious reasons, 3 years, did you think, Tony, that it would have been as big as it was?
No, there's no way. There's no way. In fact, a lot of people said that it was such a risk to be making your summer program free, to be taking it into over 12,000 square metres of gallery spaces, which makes it the largest curated show in the country for a state institution to do. There were a whole lot of signposts for a lot of people that said, this is crazy, but we got 1.2 million visitors. And because it was free, because it was accessible and because it was generous.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also very conscious of being inclusive. Like, we're very conscious of our gender mix, you know, just trying to sort of talk about topics that are not always the most comfortable but are important to our times. But also there's a friendly element, there's a family element, there's a child, kids element. There's the garden and entertainment, the public programs. You know, there's a whole series of late night programming, which we'll do again for this one as well. We try and really make it a celebration of contemporary thinking, art, design.
Where did the idea come from, Tony? You know, like was there a, you know, like a long plan of you? Like everyone was, you know, like you went to your team, and congratulations on your team. I talked to so many of them over the year, and they're all just so passionate about what they do, and they make me passionate, make me want to run to the NGV and see the next exhibition.
Well, can I say thank you for interviewing them, because Joy's support for the arts is incredible. We really value that.
Well, it's my that's why I'm here. That's why I'm an art show, and that's and the NGV plays a big part. It's, as a matter of fact, over the last 12 months, there was about 2 months where three of the 4 weeks in the month I had somebody from the NGV on, because we were doing so much.
Yeah.
So many exhibitions were opening. Yeah. So where did the idea come from? You know, like you actually mentioned about, you know, like other cities and countries have all the big major exhibitions. Did you think we've got to do something here?
Yeah. When I was first appointed as the director, it was one of the things that people lobbied me over the most. It was, you know, this need for more ambitious, high investment sort of commitment around contemporary art and design. And design's a critical part too, because we've added design into our language of curatorial practice. That's why we have the Design Week now, which is now in its fifth or sixth year. We have the only design department in the country that just looks at design. It could be anything from industrial to architectural to jewellery, whatever. So that was the important part. And Melbourne is just a great centre for design globally. So design is important. Contemporary art, while the gallery was doing a lot, they were relatively small and not large investments so much around contemporary, in the same way that we were investing in historic art like the Winter Masterpiece Show. So that was a recurring comment. I'd come from Brisbane, where the Asia Pacific Triennial I'd seen the impact of that into its 20th year, and thought, wow, imagine if we projected something similar for Melbourne, but with our own slant. And then we also realised we wanted to build the collection. So we're going to work actively around the world and build this new network. What's the legacy? Because some of these biennials and triennials, independent curators come in with collections that they've sourced around the world, and then they go back to the artist studios or back to the original owners. We wanted something more like the Brisbane model, which also left a legacy. So 80% of the works from the first triennial and the second triennial, and that's for the second one, we've raised over $10.5 million just for acquisitions from our community. Yeah, it's extremely generous. There's a lot about our city. But it means when our staff are all on the ground and go to art fairs and contacting people, they know when they're selecting artworks that they will then have an ongoing life in our city, because they'll come back into a whole series of new displays forever. So, you know, it's building collections, it's building awareness and new audiences, it's networking Melbourne around the globe, which has a lot of benefits for us for other opportunities and so on. The books are also really important. So the publication for the first triennial, I sound immodest saying this, but it is true, and it was my amazing staff that did this, but it actually won the first prize globally for an art book prize. This is the best art book in the world, was the prize through the US where it was awarded. And they said that was based on content, design, ambition and everything. This catalogue will actually exceed that in terms of scale. It'll be over 1,000 pages, 4 volumes magnetised into one case, with authors, again, great Melbourne writers, but also people from all over the world contributing to a set of themes that we've come up with. So, you know, it's just healthy to see our city having both this local and this international conversation. And yeah, the benefits just keep rolling on.
Mm. What I loved about the last exhibition, and I'm sure it will work its way in this time around, is that some of the masters that you have on the walls, all of a sudden they were left there and something extraordinary was put in front of them, like the room with the skulls, those huge skulls. I just loved going back into that space and just watching people walking in between these huge skulls with all these masters still sitting on the wall.
I'm really glad you said that, because we've done that again.
Uh-huh.
And that was probably for me personally the most nerve-wracking, because that wasn't really mimicking anybody. That was just us saying, well, we've got so much art we want to share. We've got opportunities for juxtapositions that have never happened and rarely happen globally, because traditionally any collections like that tend to be managed in a more traditional way, you know. Yep. All the contemporary art is not a part of the remit of a historic museum, that kind of thing. Yep. Whereas we can do all of that. So I thought there might be quite a backlash. I just didn't know how it would go. But we worked very carefully as a team to nuance it and display it as we could. And people were blown away. And it was getting people through collections. So, you know, we assume that everyone's going through the historic galleries. Well, actually, there's a whole generation, particularly the younger audiences, who just don't see it as relevant to them at all. So they've just stopped going to in the numbers that I feel they're used to and should be going in. Whereas once you start familiarising the space with other projects and other ideas, they start to reintroduce themselves to it. So that's had a very positive effect in terms of just getting more people through the building. Mm. But also it's been great fun to actually see the collections sort of in dialogue with new things. And I have to say, there's one that we've done called Fallen Fruit, which is traditionally in our 16th, 17th century mezzanine gallery. And this is the campest wallpaper installation you've ever seen. It's all ombre, so it goes from hot pink to bright greens to oranges to yellows to black. And these LA designers, two guys, have gone and used a lot of motifs that they've found in Australia, flora and fauna, but they've sort of faded objects and designs in and out, and then they work with us digitally. They have to do this to hang the artworks, and they've, you know, popped in a few favourites from other galleries as well. Honestly, it's so excessive, but it's so exuberant, such a celebration of what contemporary thinking can do with historic material, that I think people will love it. But the broader theme on that floor, so on the second level where you go from loosely from the 17th century through to the mid-20th century collections, we've pretty much made every artwork on that floor an artwork based on light. The idea is, we loosely have called it the floor of light, but we found so many artworks that required illumination, whether it was this Indian collective called Promarama, who were working with very fine LED lights to create curtains. And we said, if we work with you in the factory, could we make this a vast curtain of light? Then we talked to our designers and a sound artist and said, what if our salon gallery, the red room with the Victorian pictures from floor to ceiling, what if they could all be curated so that at certain times certain things would come out through the way that we would illuminate everything? Whoa. So we've turned it into a light and sound show. And we have, you know, lamp designers and mirror designers who embed lighting into their works all throughout that floor, and including a guy called Kereth Wyn Evans, a Welsh designer who was famous in the 70s, was quite a radical, used to hang out with the Sex Pistols and Vivian Westwood and people like this, who's gone on to become this really celebrated designer using very, very fine neon tube. He did a big piece for Tate Britain a couple of years ago, which a lot of people saw. This tube can also be read during the day, and he's done this massive piece that the Felton Bequester funded for the middle of our 18th century room, and it's absolutely beautiful, and it can be reconfigured over time. But the centrepiece, and then I'll stop, the centrepiece has to be on the ground floor when you talk about illumination. Another work that just sort of anchors the whole thing is a guy called Refik Anadol from Eastern European, and he's done this 10 metre by 10 metre square digital wall that floats in the middle of the floor when you walk in. Oh. And it picks up on digital information globally sourced. You can source it from anywhere, and that alters the way this pattern morphs around this big 10 by 10 metre frame. It is absolutely beguiling. I don't think there's ever been seen anything like this in the country. So it gives us permission to show these kind of people as well.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.